Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court?
Good morning.
My name is Elaine Siegel, and I represent the plaintiff, appellant, Amy Silverman. Ms. Silverman is a Chicago public school teacher of a number of years. She has a Type 75 administrative credential in addition to her high school teaching credential, and she has served for years some of the most challenged children in the school system. In this pregnancy discrimination claim, Ms. Silverman has been terminated two different times. These terminations have been called non-renewals. Each year during the probationary period for a non-tenured teacher, Ms. Silverman has since attained teacher tenure, but at the end of the year, the probationary teachers must be renewed or non-renewed. The first non-renewal occurred at the end of the 2004-2005 school year, right after Ms. Silverman announced her pregnancy. She alleges pregnancy discrimination in connection with that. Ms. Silverman immediately filed charges of pregnancy discrimination, both with the U.S. EEOC and with the Chicago Board internal offices that conducted investigations. She was reinstated that same summer, albeit to a position that was much more difficult. And the second termination occurred at the end of the following year, which she alleges constituted retaliation. Now, the board admits that in the summary judgment proceedings below, it stipulated that Ms. Silverman made out her prima facie case of pregnancy discrimination for purposes of summary judgment. And that stipulation ran both to the direct and the indirect methods of proof.
I looked at the case in the page in the record that you cited for that, saying that it applied to the direct proof, and I didn't see it.
Well, I think if you look at the reply brief,
mm-hmm.
it's very clear. The Board of Education's reply brief, I don't have a page citation for you, but I can get that.
Page one, and I've looked at that, and I don't see it.
The Board of Education says everything that the plaintiff has to say is superfluous because it's been stipulated that she made her prima facie case. There is no qualification at any point concerning whether it was the direct method of proof or the indirect method of proof to which the plaintiff could make a prima facie case. And as a result of this, we've got two different proof structures or two different analyses that the court needs to engage in order to determine whether or not she made out a case for defeating summary judgment, whether she established issues of material fact.
Well, the term prima facie case obviously is a little awkward as applied to a direct evidence case. If what you're saying is correct, then the board had no purpose in even moving for summary judgment on a direct evidence case, right?
No, I don't agree. I think that they recognized that they had to narrow the issues, and that there were certain things that they believed that they could eliminate through the summary judgment process. But under the Venturelli case, under this court's decision in Venturelli, there is plainly a prima facie case that applies in the context of the direct method of proof. And there are three different ways of establishing it. One is through this mosaic of different pieces of circumstantial evidence. Another one is through admissions. You can have admissions that come from the parties. Actually, there are four. There is a method of establishing this by showing systematically that people in the protected category were treated differently from people in the non-protected category. And then finally, you have a proof process that's kind of analogous to the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting method of proof, except that you have to establish the whole thing in order to make this prima facie case. Now, once under the direct method, you establish your prima facie case, then the burden of production shifts. And the plaintiff, although the plaintiff bears the burden of proof throughout, the burden of production shifts to the defendant, who has to show, you know, much as in a First Amendment case, that even absent the impermissible motive, that they would have taken the same action anyway. So what the board had to show is that they would have fired plaintiff anyway at the end of that first year, based on the facts that they put forward. Now, what we have here, it's germane to both the direct and the indirect method of proof. We have, at the end of the 2004-2005 year, a situation where Dr. Karvelis went into the computer system three different times in order to make her determination as to who would be in and who would be out for the following year. Two of those times, Dr. Karvelis renewed Amy Silverman. The third time, which was immediately after the board found out that they had an opening that, or they had a position that they had to cut. They had to close a position. That was the point that Dr. Karvelas selected Amy Silverman. Now, it's very, very difficult for the board to turn around and try to argue that based on the reasons that it's come forward with, that it would have non-renewed plaintiff, no matter whether she were pregnant or not. The only reason that the board puts forward for selecting Amy Silverman at that point, at that third circumstance, is that supposedly there were two different classroom observations that Dr. Karvelas had made. The first one, which the board does not discuss in its brief here, this first one, Dr. Karvelas came into a classroom where Amy Silverman was co-teaching with another teacher. She was a special education support teacher, and the other teacher was giving the class. And in that particular instance, it was a Spanish class. It was proceeding through direct instruction where the teacher was giving a grammar lesson, going over conjugations. She was giving a lecture to the class, and Amy Silverman stood over to the side while this lecture was in process. At the conclusion of the lecture, and after Dr. Karvelas had left, Amy Silverman became engaged with the students. Dr. Karvelas wasn't there to observe that. Dr. Karvelas would say now, the board would say now, that that was a basis for deciding to terminate Amy Silverman because she wasn't doing anything in the classroom.
No, well, that's not what the argument is at all.
Right.
What the board is saying is there were other teachers, if you rank them, who were preferable to her. We're not talking about firing someone. It's just that some people perform better than others. And in this particular case, the plaintiff, in the judgment, whether it be correct or not, of the officials, was not as good as some of those that she kept. She wasn't fired. It's just they looked at this, and having looked at her, they said, well, maybe we'd like somebody else. I mean, that's the board's position on this case, but they didn't fire her.
Whether you call it a non-renewal, and I'll accept the correction to call it a non-renewal, the reason that they put forward for the non-renewal, the reason they picked her out, knowing that she was an excellent teacher, the reason that they put forward was how she was performing in the class that day and in another day when Dr. Karvelas came in and the students were engaged in a classroom activity that was very active. And in both of those instances, Dr. Karvelas didn't simply say, there are other teachers who are better. Dr. Karvelas actually, according to my client, she actually gilded the lily. She changed the record. She said in the first classroom that there was a student with a Walkman that Amy Silverman didn't correct. Amy Silverman denies that that happened. She was present in the classroom. She saw what was going on. She denied that that occurred. Now, that is an instance in which the veracity of Dr. Karvelas is called directly into question. Similarly, in the second class, Dr. Karvelas said that the students were wildly out of control, that they were running around, that they were screaming. And my client says, no, that didn't happen.
Well, somebody had to be cut. I mean, there was going to be a reduction in force. And you can be sure that in the years to come, many teachers are going to be cut.
Sure will.
It's called being out of money, which is the position of these boards. But what did pregnancy have to do with this? I mean, she was hired and put back to work after the board knew she was pregnant.
Well, they put her back in, though, but the process itself is very revealing. And again, this is not a straightforward situation where the plaintiff was simply rehired. The plaintiff was one of several candidates that were considered. And even though Dr. Karvelas had promised Amy Silverman that she was going to give her that job, when the actual time came, she offered it to other teachers. She was finally told by the board's law department that they had to give it to Amy Silverman, and Amy Silverman accepted it when it was given to her. But Dr. Karvelas, again, has said she has one version of the story. She claims that she was just looking at some other teachers as replacements. But one of those teachers testified, and she said, no, that's not what happened. She was offered that position as a regular position. So these are issues that call into question the sincerity and the veracity. The true belief principle on which the trial court relied was erroneous.
But your suit is against the Board of Education,
that's
not
correct.
Dr. Karvelas.
That's correct.
And regardless, why does the process make a difference here, since she was reinstated after her pregnancy?
Well, because that goes to the question of Dr. Karvelas's veracity, both with respect to the prior year. She'd promised at the time that she made the non-renewal decision, She communicated to Amy Silverman that she would offer her a job if it came up. A job did come up. She immediately went out and started looking at other people. It also pertains to the question of retaliation. Was Amy Silverman properly considered for the following year? She was placed in this very difficult autism unit. And were Dr. Karvelas' criticisms, again, genuine, or were they fabrications? One point that I'd like to make before I reserve my rebuttal time. Dr. Silverman purported to rely on an affidavit, on observations by a school counselor, Dr. Love. Amy Silverman testifies repeatedly that Dr. Love never set foot in her classroom, never made any observations. There is no documentation in the record that any of that ever occurred. Dr. Karvelas claims that she relied on the work of her colleague in determining not to renew Amy Silverman for the following year. So these questions all go to the veracity of Dr. Karvelas, and I submit that summary judgment was improperly granted.
What are your client's damages in this case?
She suffered reputational injury. She had substantial pain and suffering at the time of her termination. She went into some premature labor. She had Braxton cramps, I believe that they're called, and contractions, and they had to be.
They are attributable to the Board of Education?
Yes. It was because of the stress of being terminated.
And as far as her reputation goes, she got advancements and evaluates other special ed teachers.
Yes, that's correct. But only after having to explain being terminated twice from, or non-renewed twice, from Lincoln Park High School, which of course is...
Just a day's pay or day's work other than the time she was on leave, and she got the full 10 weeks leave.
That's correct. I'd like to, unless you have further questions at this point, I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Lauder.
Judges, counsel, I think Dr. Karvelas was in a hard spot. I mean, this is her first year as principal of Lincoln Park High School, which is one of the top 100 high schools in the country. She had 161 teachers that she had to look, had to supervise. She had thousands of kids, and 65 of those teachers were probationary assigned teachers that she had to decide, am I going to keep these teachers on for another year so that they're a year closer to tenure, or am I going to decide they should go somewhere else? And Amy Silverman was one of those. Now, we talk about the observations that Dr. Karvelas did the first year in 2004-2005. Amy Silverman admitted that Dr. Karvelas came into her classroom and scolded her students because they were too loud. Okay? Dr. Karvelas on February 3rd told all the probationary assigned teachers, I'm going to come observe your classroom. The very next day, she's walking down the hall and she hears a ruckus coming out of a classroom. She walks into Maria Sanchez and Amy Silverman's classroom and has to scold her students to tell them to calm down and be quiet. This is the second day of the observation. What would you think if you were the principal? You don't have a lot of time. You've got to look at 65 of them. I'd submit that that was a month before Amy Silverman told her she was pregnant. Okay? That wasn't a made-up thing. Silverman admits it. She said she came in and scolded my teachers. She came in and scolded my students. That's not a pretext. That's exactly what she saw. Now, Ms. Siegel said that one of the people, after Dr. Karvelas said that she was going to give Silverman a job if she got another position, she says that she started interviewing other people and that person told her that she had a full-time job. That is not correct. It's not what the record says. This Petraz, the person who was interviewed for the job, said she didn't tell me it was full-time. Neither she nor Jane Ryan told me it was a full-time position. She doesn't say when it happened, so it's quite possible, because Amy Silverman wasn't in the interview, that she was interviewing Petraz to take over for Silverman's maternity leave. She wasn't there. Moving on to the second year, and it's important to note that she had that job offer on July 28th. She had a written job offer, July 28th, come and take this position. She didn't accept that job offer until August 11th. In the meantime, her lawyer, for some reason, is calling the board saying, does she have a job offer? She has a written job offer. What more do you need? So I don't think there's any problem with the job offer or any indication that she didn't have a job offer. The other thing they say is that when Silverman came back from her maternity leave in November of 2005, this person who was substituting for her said, oh, I'm surprised you're back. I thought I had a full-time job. She's got a job offer, a written job offer, July 28th. So I don't see how that's relevant at all. Let's move on to the second year, 2005-2006. In that year, the first observation Dr. Carvelis makes, she comes in and asks, Amy Silverman, do you have a lesson plan? And she's, you know, rifling through her papers, and she can't find one. At her deposition, she was asked, hey, did you send her a lesson plan the next day? Did you explain why you didn't have one? No, she didn't. A month later, Dr. Carvelis comes back to her classroom, asks her for a lesson plan again, and she still doesn't have one. I mean, to me, that's a pretty good reason to say, I don't think I want you at my school. Can't do a lesson plan? That's pretty basic. So I think that that's a good reason that for the second year that she wasn't renewed.
Did you argue at the district court that Ms. Silverman had not suffered an adverse employment action?
I don't see how we could have because, I mean, she was non-renewed both years. I don't see how that could be an issue.
So the non-renewal alone is an adverse action?
I agree.
Even though they didn't actually take effect?
Well, the non-renewal, I guess it could be because she could have lost her job and she... I don't see how she could argue the first non-renewal wasn't because she had a job before, you know, she would have come back to school. She didn't lose any pay. The second non-renewal, if she hadn't gotten a job, that could have been an adverse action. But you're right. She did never lose any money. But then she could say...
You did not assert that she failed to show that she had an adverse employment action.
I think what we said was that the bad evaluations and her assignment to teach an autism class were not adverse employment actions, and that's what she was arguing. I believe that's what the dispute on the adverse employment action was.
What's your explanation about the, we've been told, as a stipulation to a direct case, which means this is absolutely a fact question then? Did you stipulate that this is a direct, they've got a direct case here?
What we stipulated was that they proved their prima facie case under the indirect method. But to prove under the direct method, you have to show that what the decision...
I understand that, but you heard what the argument was here.
I don't really understand that argument because under the direct method, I think they're saying that they have a mosaic of evidence. So
no,
they're saying
that you agreed... that you stipulated that they had put on a prima facie direct case.
But
I did not take it that way, but that's what they're arguing. I'm just asking you what you say about that.
No, that's not true. Under the direct method, she would have to show that Carvelis made her decision based upon pregnancy.
I understand.
I don't think we stipulated that she made her decision based upon pregnancy.
We understand that.
I think what they're asking you to do is find that what Carvelis did was unfair, unwise, inaccurate. That's not your job. What your job is to do is to find it, is did Dr. Carvelis discriminate against her on the basis of pregnancy? And Mr. Silverman hasn't shown that, so I ask you to affirm the award of summary judgment to the board.
Seeing no other questions, thank you. And Ms. Siegel, your reply or rebuttal.
Just very briefly, Your Honor, in response to your question as to whether there were an adverse employment action, employment works and functions in the Board of Education, once a probationary assigned teacher has been non-renewed, she has to go out and find another job. Effectively, she's out of work. There is no intervening employment assignment, and during the time period in issue here, Amy Silverman had to go out. She had to interview. I'm talking now about the second non-renewal. She had to go out, interview for other positions. She was fortunate she was able to land another position, but all too often those positions are not forthcoming. It's not as if the board stepped in and offered her a position. So, yes, the termination from that particular position would qualify as an adverse employment action. It was
did
a minute.
Did the board argue that none of these were adverse actions?
No.
They
did argue that that the assignment to the autism unit didn't constitute an adverse employment action. Just briefly with respect to that, I'd like to say that that the autism unit, without disparaging that assignment in any way, was extremely difficult, very, very onerous, working with very heavily challenged children, and that we would submit that is a sufficient material change in the terms and conditions of employment to constitute an adverse employment action. Panel has any other questions?
Not hearing any. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to both counsel, and we'll take that case under advisement.